Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to challenge you to transform your financial future through the principles of the most profitable business in the world, banking.
We believe everyone should be involved in two businesses, the business that you're in and the banking business. Everyday people can replicate what bankers have been doing for centuries to leverage capital and build wealth through private lending.
Join us as we uncover the truths about money, expose lies and myths, and flip conventional financial advice on its head. Here we go.
All right, Paul. How you doing, man? Working from home again today, huh?
Yeah, you could say that.
All right.
I did
or,
say that.
Or Paul. not working from home.
Yeah, wasn't feeling very well today, and so, but here I am. So if I have a slippage, we'll just blame it on that.
Okay. Yeah, I tried to work from home today, and then I had so many internet problems that I just had to go for a walk, blow off steam. I feel like nothing sets me off more than like not having a Wi-Fi signal. Like, can you imagine? Like, nothing else sets me off so quickly. I'm just like, I can't take it. Like, why isn't it working?
Yeah, it's, and you had some work done. Do you think that was any related to that?
Well, yeah, because I took my router out of my office because I was having work done on the office and I moved to somewhere else, and it took a long time to get working, finally worked. Then I brought it back in my office and it took like an hour to start working again. So yeah, that was a frustrating experience, man. Mm. First world problems are sometimes the most difficult problems, I gotta say.
Yeah.
You know, people in the third world don't understand these problems.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I sound terrible right now. Anyway.
Well, yeah, you look good. That's all that really matters.
Thank you. Thank you. And the office is looking good. I got picture lights up now. I just need a picture. So.
Yeah, it came together very nice. Love the color. It looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to get a smoking chair over there in the corner, open up the window. Then I got to get a door put on the office so I can just lock the world out and sit in here all day.
Yep. And can you do a pocket door there, or is it going to be a traditional like French door type thing? Or
no, it's not big enough for a French door. It's just going to be one big door, a transom up top, hopefully a thick enough door to block some noise because the kitchen is right out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not the ideal location, but it's in the back of the house. I got a nice view of the woods. So privacy, it's nice.
Nice.
But got to get it done before the summer when all the kids are back home lounging around the house all day. So yeah. Anyway, so we decided we're going to create a new segment on the show. We want to call this one IBC in Action. So I think we've got enough stories coming in, enough client success stories, or just something a client thought of or is doing differently that we'd like to highlight every time. So in the first one is going to be you, right? Which you're my first client. So, hey, this is still client story.
That's right.
Yeah. So I'll let you take it over for that.
Yeah. Thanks. So, so this is just really an update on the construction loan saga, and I'm happy to announce that it's over and that I closed on the loan yesterday. We signed papers, and then I wired the money this morning to the title company,
But that was a good feeling. Cue the applause.
Yeah, that's right. It was just, you know, it's been a drag, right? It's been on my mind every day for like the last 6 months. So, turns out with the second bank, the one that I ended up going with, it took less than 2 months total. But I just wanted to cover a quick lessons learned, and I kind of covered it in past episodes, but bottom line, you're thinking about building. This is just my experience, but just broadly, I think this is pretty sound advice because lenders are going to vary with their terms and requirements, but take whatever the cost of construction is going to be, including your lot, right? So that is all going to get rolled up into one unless you own the lot outright. But if you don't, add that to your cost of your loan. And then plan on having 40% of the cost of construction in cash. And that's not qualified plan money. That's not 401k money or IRA money. It's cash. So that could be in a brokerage somewhere. It could be in a savings account. It could be in dividend paying whole life insurance policies, whatever. Have that in cash. And I think Yeah, it's pretty significant. Just because construction loan underwriting, again, is a little bit different, apparently. So this was a first for us, and we learned a lot through it. The second thing is, if possible, to make the underwriting simpler, because everyone's been through a mortgage process. They ask for everything, right? The returns. And if you have multiple returns, like let's say you own a business or two, or you have a couple LLCs, or you're a limited partner in some real estate, all those things, not only did they want to see the K-1s, and of course, Dave can attest to this because I had to have him send me, we have a little joint thing together, and I had to get the full return on that, which is something I never cared to look at or cared to see.
Right.
Anyway, all I need is the K-1. So they wanted to see all of that. And so one day I get a list of CPAs and I'm like, I don't know who most of these people are. Luckily, I was able to substitute a couple of operating agreements for the return just to show my ownership share, basically, is what they wanted to see. So anyway, simplify things if you can. If you can't, just plan on adding that additional time and space in for that underwriting process to just be more in depth, and it's going to take more time, and it's going to be annoying.
Yeah. So, how did IBC fit into any of this, if at all?
Yeah. So the down payment, in fact, the entire down payment for the cost of construction came from our 7 dividend paying whole life policies that luckily, 2018, early 2019, started to think differently, started to reroute money I already had, right? Savings, money we were already saving, just and relocated it and started paying premium with it. And thank goodness, because if I had continued down the traditional or conventional path, I should say, of just maxing the 401k and, putting money into qualified plans, beyond that, we wouldn't be even talking about this because I wouldn't have been approved for any of this.
Right. Because you said that money can't count as liquid cash.
Right.
Right in that process.
It in some cases, and in most cases, it will count as a reserve requirement. But they gave our TSP a 40%, what they call the haircut. So they took the value of the account and chopped it 40% and counted that as the reserve.
Wow.
I didn't really understand. Maybe for tax purposes and penalty is why they did that. I'm fairly certain, right? To account for that in case you had to get that money.
Yeah.
But the TSP is a little more flexible than other 401ks. A lot of time, other 401ks, you can't get to that money outside if they have a loan feature and it's only going to be $50,000 or half the account value. So it's very restrictive. So anyway, that's my story, and thank God for IBC.
Yeah. Yeah, because you definitely would not have just been stacking your money in a bank, right? That would have been, you would not have had all that money, 40% in cash, just sitting in a bank. It would have been locked up somewhere. So good.
Yep.
Good for you. So you gave you more options, more possibilities in life, and it gave you the ability to do what you want to do.
And that's the important thing, right? Is out of a lot of people we know that are in a similar position, similar, background, whatever, leaving the military. We're the only ones that are doing this right now. So it's, feels good.
Yeah. Well, good. All right, man. Well, thanks for the update. So I guess we're done with the construction loan saga. Finally put a pin in that one.
Oh, thank goodness.
Now we can go on to the contractor saga, because you'll have stories about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no doubt. glad to share lessons learned along the way.
So when do you break ground?
Next week.
Nice. You going to go out there with a gold shovel?
No, they're going to take pictures for us at every stage. And we have to go out there for a few things, the electrical walkthrough and some other stuff. But people are like, you need to be out there like 4 days a week. I'm like, well, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it's a little tough to manage. You could hire some boots on the ground out there, I guess, to be your, just get one of your neighbors to be the project manager and then invite them over to the pool for a barbecue.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, a conversation I've had recently with several people, it's funny because, I'm talking to a lot of pilots And a lot of them are kind of in the midst of contract negotiations. And they're expecting increases in salary or back pay, or they're expecting to upgrade. So it could be any job where, you know, you've got another job or another promotion on the horizon. And one of the biggest questions, most common questions I've gotten lately is, hey, I think in 1 or 2 years from now, I'll be able to pay a lot more premium. So I want to be able to start here where I'm at right now, but 2 years from now, I want to add more to my policy. Can I do that? So really, the question that they're asking is kind of the question on, or the statement on page 48 in Nelson's book. How do I expand my system to accommodate more income? So that's a big question on people's mind. And that's a great question. I love when people ask that, because what is that saying? It means that, like, they see the importance of this. They see the benefits, and they want to be able to plan ahead to be able to put that money to work right away inside a policy when they're ready to go.
Yes, I think it shows the graduate level understanding of IBC, and it takes people, you know, different lengths of time to get there. I thought I understood exactly what was going on after we opened the first four policies under when you first got your license, right? And I thought I was just like, yeah, look at that, man. And then a year later, I had become an agent and opened up another policy that was bigger than all four of the other ones combined.
Yeah.
And so yes, it shows a high level of understanding. It shows the appreciation of capital and controlling one's own capital, which is important, right? And not being afraid to capitalize over a period of time. So, yeah.
Right.
But there's ways you could do that, right?
There
make
are.
More money now, what?
Yeah. And, you know, what most people have in mind initially is, hey, I want to start this policy in a couple years from now. I want to be able to add premium to it and make it a bigger policy at that point. So can we really do that?
Yes.
So there's, and we'll get to that, like how you can kind of build in some room to accept more premium down the road. Of course, it comes with trade-offs.
That's right.
So that's not the most ideal scenario, but the fact is, you're just talking about expanding your system. And the answer is yes, you'll be able to add more later. Will it be in the exact same policy? Probably not. But does it really matter? No. As long as you've got insurability or insurable interest, you can continue to expand your system, and which is what people should do. I probably got a lot of clients who have one policy, right? And over the last 5 years, maybe there's some that are at the point now, probably several, you know, especially who got policies 2, 3, 4 years ago. That have the ability to fund more, and it's time to expand the system. So how are some ways they can expand the system?
Sure. You could start a second policy on yourself. And, and that's what we did in my household, right? Our fifth policy was on me.
Yeah. So that means you had two policies. Everybody else had one at that time.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
We started with one each, and then I added my second one was our fifth policy.
And why you? Because you and Tammy were both really making the same amount of money.
Yes, that's true. At the time, I think it was because I'm more likely to die earlier because we're 2 weeks apart. I'm a little bit older, but you know we're the same age. Statistically speaking, I will predecease Tammy.
Yeah.
I kind of run the finances for our house, right? I haven't done as good a job as Nelson did and teaching, you know, Mary Nash how to be a widow, right? Because, you know, we all think we're gonna live forever, right?
We're invincible.
So yeah, we're invincible. So yes, but at the time I'd gotten into the business, I started making a little bit of money in the business. So we felt that the natural expansion should be on me. And then I had it in my mind, if you remember going back, and maybe we've talked about this, I don't know now. That was what I considered my pension policy from the Army. I was going to use my entire lieutenant colonel, over 20-year pension to fund that particular policy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was earmarked for, and that's why that's what I designed it around.
Yeah. So let's side.
I'd forgotten that kind of.
Yeah. So have I. But I think that's a great thing to bring up for a lot of military listeners. Like that pension, when you retire after 20 years, you're in your early to mid 40s. Like you should not count that as, don't need to live off that income.
I think it's a mistake to count it as income.
Absolutely. Because in one, you don't go get what you're really worth on the outside. You kind of sell yourself short potentially.
Yeah.
And two, that's wake up and breathe money. I mean, talk about mailbox money. All you got to do is fog a mirror and that money comes in.
Yep.
That is the money that should be earmarked for the future or for building something now that's going to be huge in the future. I think that's a great thing to do. Like you had a great idea there. Create a policy that your pension can start funding, which next year your pension can start funding that policy for you.
That's awesome. Exactly right. And then some, because cost of living adjustments and that premium has stayed fixed, right?
Right. So that premium is going to be a lot easier to fund as the years go on.
I'm going to have to open up another policy to accept what the actual pension turns out to be.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Plus, and
I'm excited to do that, folks.
Yeah. Plus, any VA disability that comes your way.
Sure.
Like a lot of people got VA disability. That's, I don't like the term free money, but that's money that you didn't really expect and didn't plan for.
Right.
And it's tax free. Imagine funding your life insurance policy, which grows all the amount that grows, you can access tax free. Imagine starting that with tax free money and growing it tax free. Like, I can't think of anything better. That's incredible.
Yeah, anytime you can reduce the amount of federal income tax or state income tax you're paying, it's, of course, wonderful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I kind of forgot that I had done that, to be honest with you. But that's that was the original intent behind it. So, I really, and we've talked about that, but I think that's a good mindset for folks with military pensions is too often they count it as part of their income, and I think that's short-sighted. Because a lot of the people that we know, these are highly intelligent, highly effective people, very successful in their careers. Don't sell yourself short. Go out there and
get what you're worth.
Get that job that that'll pay you what you're worth.
They're not paying. Yeah, they don't want to hire you for your skills. They want to hire you for your leadership ability.
That's right.
Which they can't teach in corporate America. So it takes them decades to get somebody to the point that they need them to be. Usually where the military can crank them out because you're in that environment day in, day out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how else can I expand my system? And of course we have done this, right?
Yeah. So, you could do what I did, which is get remarried and have five new family members all of a sudden. I got five new insurable interests.
Right.
So, I mean, I got a policy on the wife and all four kids because one, I needed to expand my system based on more income coming in. And two, I want them to have that forever. Yes. And it's something I'll be able to pass off to them when I see fit. Start on the breadwinner. Like we always say, we said this so many times throughout these episodes. Then from the breadwinner, make sure they're fully covered or got enough in place so the family doesn't even have to bat an eye about any financial needs if, God forbid, something happens to them before their time. Then go to the non-breadwinning spouse or the stay-at-home spouse.
Yep.
Because that's going to be a big impact if you have kids.
Yep. A mutual person that we know, I had this exact conversation the other day through email or text. And, started on him and then bypassed the spouse, who's also the mother. And then I just was doing some confirmation. I was like, hey, does your wife have insurance that I don't know about? He's like, no, I figured I'd get the kids going. I was like, no, get her going first. So it's breadwinner or breadwinners, then non-breadwinner, mm-hmm. stay-at-home spouse, which whoever that is, and then the children.
And then dependents. Because they are 100% dependent on you, which is why you should have the most insurance.
Right.
And they come last because you're not going to need their, you know, that death benefit when they graduate. But by doing that, you're not only taking care of your kids by creating this system for them that they can use for the rest of their lives. You're taking care of your grandkids, right? Because when they're gone, their grandkids are going to get that payout. So
that's right.
Yeah. So those are the easiest options on expanding your system. So don't think you have to, you know, be able to add more to the policy that you get in place right now. It's a natural expansion of your system, and it's who's next in line. That's what we do. And we just pick them off one by one, or when it comes to the kids, all the kids at the same time.
Yep. So we have a strategy that we like to use, number four there, and that we are using in our personal lives and are recommending to our clients, is that to guarantee your ability for future expansion of your system of policies, what we like to do to bridge the gap between what you're able to pay in whole life premium is likely going to be not produce the amount of death benefit you need to get to your full human life value.
Right.
And as a reminder, folks, human life value is just a valuation of from the insurance company's eyes on, you know, basically what your future income potential is between now and roughly around age 65, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So that's how you calculate that. Take your income, multiply times the amount of years you have between your age and age 65, and that gives you your generally your human life value in the insurance company's view. So Dave and I have done this. We've opened up convertible term policies on our spouses, on ourselves, so that regardless of what happens to our health, we can convert that term policy into another whole life policy. And we can convert some of that term death benefit in little chunks. We could do all of it at once or anything in between. Mm-hmm. So it gives you that flexibility to guarantee your ability to pay more, the premium that you want to pay.
And right, absolutely.
The ability to pay.
And that's the best way to plan for the natural expansion of your system, is to have that ready to go.
Yep.
You know, you qualify, lock your health in today, and mm-hmm. then that's available whenever you're ready. So that's great. And you can plan ahead to the point where, you know, I was talking to somebody this last week who he's expecting a pay increase, or maybe his wife's going back to work at a certain time next year. So they know they're going to have this much more income coming in, but they don't want to increase their lifestyle at all. They want to defeat Parkinson's law. Mm-hmm. So they want that money earmarked before it even comes in. Out of sight, out of mind kind of mindset. Okay.
Pay yourself first.
So you pay yourself first. And the best way to do that is have that convertible term ready to go. So right before that happens, let's convert it, get that policy set up. So as soon as that income comes in, bam, you've got a premium to pay. And you put it to work right away. So yeah, that's
great strategy.
Great strategy.
Dave Ramsey would be proud of us.
He would be. He'd be so proud.
Peddling term.
Like we said, we don't have anything against it. As long as it's supplementing your whole life.
It is a useful tool to have to transfer risk away from yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And set yourself up for success in the future to convert it. So,
correct.
I mean, even people, so I've had a client, or we have a shared client who was declined for life insurance, but luckily he's got some convertible term policy with some random insurance company. Right, that I've never really heard of before, but he has the ability to convert it to whole life.
Right.
And I said, well, great, at least you've got that if you can't ever qualify for, you know, a policy that we could structure for IBC.
And it's not, if I remember correctly, it's not a mutual company, I don't think.
I don't think so. So it would mostly just be strictly for the death benefit.
Right.
You know. And the, you know, the cash value will grow, albeit a lot slower.
You basically get, when you buy regular whole life, folks, you basically get a non-participating or non-dividend paying all base premium policy.
Yeah. So it takes a long time for the cash to grow.
It does. It certainly does. But yeah, it will pay a death benefit. No question.
Yeah. Yeah. So better than nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. So
yes, for sure.
Now here's another strategy that can be used, and we use it sparingly, and we don't overuse it, but there is a way to build some extra room in your policy to accommodate additional paid up additions. So additional premium that goes towards PUA that's not required, but you can build some room that, hey, maybe you can handle this much today, but maybe next year you'll be able to do $5,000 a year more. Well, we can build that room in. Now there's a trade-off, right? Because that's going to require more death benefit, which is going to be made up most likely from adding more term insurance.
Correct.
To the policy to increase that death benefit. So there's trade-offs. You're paying more for that term, but you've built in a little bit of room to add extra if you have the ability to do so.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. But it's not a great way to significantly expand your system.
No, it's... Whenever I do that, I always try to keep the original intent of the policy. You know, normally we have I don't want to get into policy design, but normally we have a discussion of you know, base PUA ratios, right? Mm-hmm. And you and I have this, I think the correct view of this subject. And anyway, we do. but I'll try to keep that ratio the same, because it makes the policy foundation stronger.
Yeah.
So rather than having for example, a half base, half PUA, and then all of a sudden you add another 30% of PUA, well, you just compromise the structure of that policy. Yeah, you made it, you know, accept more premium over time, but it's weaker.
Foundation is weaker.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, we won't get into too many details.
We're having technical difficulties.
Once again, is it back?
Yeah, you sound, okay. I mean, sound great. You sounded awful there for a second.
Thanks. Yeah, it's amazing what technology can do to improve your voice. So I wanted to end with an example here of a real life example of clients that I'm working with, where they did this. They set themselves up to naturally expand their system when they have the capability to do that. So, you know, a married couple, no kids, the wife is pregnant, expecting their first kid here shortly. They're both employed, but when the baby comes, the mom's going to stay home for the next year. So their income is getting decreased this year. So really the question was, well, should we start a whole life policy on both of us, knowing that next year our income is going to increase and then we're going to have to go back and get another policy on one of us? Or what we ended up doing was, well, let's maximize the policy on the dad because he's got the active income. He's going to be working all year long. Let's do the max we can for you, dad, and let's get a convertible term policy for mom so that we lock in her health right now. We did it before she had the baby because you never know what happens when you have babies. You know, things change. Sure. So she was actually pregnant and still got preferred rating. Excellent. So that's possible. You can be pregnant, still go through underwriting. But we locked her in for a large convertible term policy that next year, a year from now, when she goes back to work, they're going to be able to fund a very large premium at that time. And who knows, maybe they'll realize, man, we actually survived on one income. So when mom goes back to work, maybe we put the majority of that income to work in a policy instead of increasing our lifestyle. Right.
Yeah. It's amazing the premium you can find. You know, I think practicing IBC in your life makes you a more disciplined person when it comes to your finances. Like, you have to be disciplined to do this, right?
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, $50,000 in debt or, you know, whatever. And
exactly.
Come in with bad habits and then, oh, all of a sudden IBC is going to fix your problems. That's not the way it works.
Right. And the great thing is we've got that cash value sitting there. But it's kind of like at arm's length. It's not right there, like where I can access it instantly. So it's at arm's length. It takes some effort, albeit not very much at all.
Not very much.
but it takes a little bit of effort. So you're putting a little bit of a barrier between you and that cash to to at least cause yourself to stop and think, do I really want to take a loan against my cash value for this? Or nah, let's just keep it there and pass on whatever I was thinking about buying or whatever.
We talked about it with our friends, you know, kind of gives you that tactical pause.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to put it. Tactical pause.
Yeah. Kind of just, cause let's face it, folks. And Dave and I are not perfect, but if you really need to think about something, is this a good idea with this cash? Is it the best use of my capital right now? Do I really need to do this? Is this a really good opportunity or is it just a opportunity?
Yeah. What did you say? You said this to me the other day because we were talking about something. You said, when there's any doubt, there is no doubt.
Oh, yeah. I stole that from...
Robert Bruce De
Niro.
Lee?
Oh, Robert De Niro said that in the movie Ronin.
Okay. So explain that one. When there's any doubt, there is no doubt.
Yeah. So it's kind of like your spidey senses. And I always tell my kids this too. It's like, if you have to think about it, if I do this, is this wrong? How is this going to be perceived?
Yeah.
It probably is. It's like, is this a bad idea? Is this going to make me lose sleep at night if I do this with my money?
Yeah. So just the fact that you had to ask that question and contemplate that.
It tells me everything I need to know.
Right.
It gives me my answer. Right. And that's how I'm going to go forward from this point on. And we've talked about it offline between the two of us, but I've told clients this several times that, you know, we both have a lot of good clients from across the income spectrum. And I tell people, I was like, listen, especially the ones that are up there in the income, they're approaching, you know, seven figures. I say, listen, you don't really need to do anything else. Just do what you're good at. You're paying high premium relative to your high income. Look at the numbers that you're going to have.
Yeah.
Do you really need to do this real estate deal that you don't have a warm and fuzzy about and it seems kind of B-team? No, you don't.
Yeah. Do you really need to take those risks? No, you don't. Just keep doing what you're good at, which is, you know, making money, doing what you're best at, doing your first occupation, right?
Your first business. Yep.
And then put your money into your second business.
And how this particular person I'm thinking of knew, it was already keeping him up and he hadn't even done anything.
Yeah.
It was already keeping him up.
Yeah.
So...
So there you go. Wise words. If there's any doubt, there is no doubt. I like that.
Robert De Niro, Ronin, 1995.
Boom.
Check me on the year. That's probably
sounds about
close.
Right. It's definitely 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. Cool. Well, great. Thanks for listening in,
1998,
everybody. 1998.
Sorry.
98. Okay. That was a good year.
Close. Yeah, it was. Graduated high school.
Yeah, same. So, all right. Well, I think we already have an idea for what we're going to talk about next week. So we'll have another IBC in action, another practical example of a client using IBC to improve their situation. So hope you guys enjoyed. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle in a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.